It's good to be with you here again this evening. I have enjoyed being here for a part of this week. It's been a privilege to learn to know some of you better. And thank you for your hospitality. Many of you have gone out of your way to be friendly to us as strangers, and we appreciate that. Certainly makes our time here more enjoyable. And so we also thank you for the gift, the wonderful gift you gave to us today. God bless you for that. And God bless you as you continue to serve Him here in this community. Ken gave you some instructions. We are to go and tell others. How are we going to do that? What are we going to do with that? I think it's especially important that we think about telling others about Jesus or letting our light shine. However you do that, it's especially important now because we may be running out of opportunity. We may be running out of opportunity. One of the songs we sang, Ken mentioned something about it too, but it talks about Jesus healing and walking here on earth, and then something about him always being the same. And we know that God and Jesus will always be the same. They will never change. But time and sense and life as we know it will not always continue the way it is. As we look around us, I think you would probably concur with the thought that our world is getting blacker, darker, more evil. There's things that you and I are hearing and seeing today that we would have never thought possible. And it just goes to show to us that the evil men are waxing worse and worse in these last days. So you can turn with me to Matthew chapter 24. The title of the message this evening is Behold, I Come Quickly. And I don't know where your mind goes when you hear that title. There's a number of different ways we could go with that. I guess tonight I would like for us to consider that and the blessing that awaits us who are faithful. There is a beautiful heavenly city that is awaiting, a place of reward, a place of indescribable glory, where Jesus Christ Himself will be there. Now we have to be ready for that, or we can't be there in that city, that beautiful city. But Jesus is coming again. We don't know when, but he's coming again. Back in the year of 1889, in the mountains of western Pennsylvania, this also happened not far from our, well, it's maybe about as far away as the place I was talking about the other night there in Somerset. This was north of us. In 1889, in the mountains of western Pennsylvania, there was a little town, there still is a little town called South Fork. Probably never heard of that little town. But in South Fork, above South Fork, I should say, on the mountain, there was a dam. It was called the South Fork Dam. And on that rainy week, the rains poured down, the water built up behind that dam, and the citizens in South Fork began to get concerned about whether or not that dam would hold. And they invested a lot of effort and were monitoring this closely, trying to make sure this dam would hold. Well, you know the story. The dam did not hold. Today, probably more commonly known as the Johnstown flood. South Fork is above Johnstown. Just a very small town. But eventually, the dam began to fail. And eventually collapsed and all the water behind the South Fork Dam was released into the Conemaugh Valley below. It was a very, very narrow valley. As you come down from the South Fork Dam, it's a very narrow valley with high sides. And so the water was channeled into a very forceful torrent. Now, as this dam was being monitored, as the people, the citizens of South Fork were getting very concerned, traveling up there, sending delegates up there to see what the condition of the dam was, there was men who went up there and said, "This is not good. This dam is going to break. Today is the day the dam's going to break." In fact, some of them dispatched riders, horseback riders, to ride into town to the telegraph office to tell everyone to vacate the town below. The riders left with their message, but no one vacated the town. The people stayed there. The message went to the nearest telegraph stations, but the officials couldn't believe. They just couldn't believe that the South Fork Dam wouldn't hold. And even if they did telegraph this message to the world, to the community, what for fools would they be if the dam wouldn't break? And the message is laid on their desk and weren't telegraphed out to the communities that would be affected by this devastating avalanche of water. As that water poured down through the Conemaugh Valley, it took everything with it. Houses, trees, barns, people, equipment, whatever was there, it washed it away. The water moved fairly slowly. It was a churning mass of debris and water that people could see coming before they were overtaken. But more than 2,000 people died that night and in the days following. More than 2,000 people died because that dam broke when they knew that it was going to break one day. It was actually a joke in South Fork. When it rained, when they got a big rainstorm, the joke was, "Is this the day the dam's going to break?" In fact, they were joking that day, but this might be the day the dam breaks. No one believed it. They had become calloused to the reality of that earthen dam that had been poorly built. They had become calloused to the reality because people were saying for years that that dam was going to break, and it had never broken. Why would it break now? Well, there was one man, one survivor, that lost everything he had, including his wife and his daughter, everything but his clothes on his back. And he said this, this really stood out to me as I read a book on this recently, or listened to a book. This really stood out to me, his testimony. He said, "If anybody be to blame," remember, this is coming from a man who lost everything. He said, "If anybody be to blame, I suppose we ourselves are among them, for we have indeed been careless in this most important matter, and most of us have paid the penalty of our neglect." In retrospect, they could easily see they should have paid attention to those warnings. There was warnings that got out, even though the telegraph operators did not telegraph them to the local towns. There was warnings that had gotten out. I'd like us to keep that story in the back of our mind. That's a little bit how it is with Christ's return, isn't it? You know, we say this might be the day. This might be the day that Christ returns. Hopefully we don't joke about it, but there's a lot of similarities in how we relate to that. We just don't hardly think it's going to be today. Jesus said, "Behold, I come quickly," 4 times in Revelation. and many will not be prepared, just like those flood victims were not being prepared. Now, unlike the telegraph operators who would not telegraph that message to the world because of whatever reasons, we dare not be like those telegraph operators. We know the Lord is coming. We are called to send out the message, to telegraph that message to the world. What are we doing with it? What are we doing with that message? Are we looking for Christ's return, or will it overtake us as a thief in the night, unprepared? Mark 13:35 says, "Watch ye therefore, for ye know not when the master of the house cometh, at even, or at midnight, or at the cock crowing, or in the morning." We just don't know, but it's coming. So now let's get to our text here in Matthew 24. I'm going to read quite a number of verses here. I probably won't read all the ones that I was going to, but let's start at verse 24. I think I might read the first 13 verses and then drop down to 36. So Matthew 24, verse 1. "And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the signs of thy coming and of the end of the world? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and shall you shall be, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall arise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved." Let's drop down to verse 36. It says, "But of that day and hour knoweth no man, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, one shall be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the goodman of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered the house to be broken up. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, My Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." I'm going to turn over to Luke 17. I may just reference some of those verses later for sake of time. But as I read through those verses, there's a lot of verses there that challenge us to be watching and to be ready. And the folly of not doing that. You know, if we knew that a thief was going to break into our house tonight, we would probably be waiting for him, wouldn't we? But we know the Lord's coming back. What are we doing with that? So as we think of Jesus returning, first thing I'd like to look at here is that the return is very personal to Jesus. Return is very personal. You know, Jesus has his bride, the church, here on earth, awaiting his return. And he has such an interest in us that he himself is going to come back to take us home. I like that. He will personally come to take us home. He won't be sending Gabriel, even though Gabriel is a very important figure, has done some very important work in the Bible. He's not going to send Gabriel to take us home. He will come personally. I'd like to read a couple of verses from 1 Thessalonians. First Thessalonians 4. Verse 13. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that ye sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God. And the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore comfort one another with these words. These words should be a comfort to us. And we'll look at that at the end, but to these words, does this thought of Jesus coming quickly without giving you any time to prepare, does that strike fear in your heart, or does that bring comfort to you? See, these verses here in this chapter that I just read, it says that we are to comfort one another with these words. You know, we know that Jesus is going to come back himself, and then he's going to take us with him to be there with him forever. As you watch the world disintegrate around us, as you watch the moral fabric of America and the world being torn to shreds around us, doesn't it make you want to go along? I hope that it does. I'm sure that it does. But Jesus himself, the Lord himself, should descend from heaven. At the ascension, Ken stopped reading just a couple of verses before this, but let me just read to you a couple of verses from Acts 1, 9 to 11. It says, when he had spoken these things, while they beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. This is the disciples. They're watching. Jesus had just gone. And while they stood steadfastly, while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel, which also said, ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus, which is taken up from you into heaven, shall so come in like manner as ye have seen him go into heaven. Just the way you've seen him leave, you're going to see him coming back again. It's going to be him. This was a promise. And I believe this was a great comfort to these disciples. They had just walked the last 3 years with Jesus, and here he goes, gone from their sight. This was a comfort to them, I believe, that Jesus is going to come back again. Of course, I believe they thought that it would be soon. And here we are. We're still here thousands of years later, which just means that we're much closer. But this is a promise. He will come again. No questions. It will happen. Hebrews 9:28 says, so Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear. He is going to appear again, the second time, without sin unto salvation. I said this should be a comfort to us. John 14, there's a couple of verses that I would like to read to you. It says, let not your heart be troubled. These are familiar verses to us. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God. And believe me, there's a lot of troubles around us, aren't there? Is it easy for you as you look around to be troubled? It is for me. I can be troubled. And sometimes I just have to stop myself from reading the stuff that's happening and absorbing that, because it just doesn't do much for me spiritually. And it troubles me. Let not your heart be troubled. Do you believe in God? Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again. Jesus says, I will come again himself. I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. So the return will be very personal. The return is also imminent. Jesus' return is imminent. Is there anything that has to happen yet before Jesus Christ can return? Is there anything that has to happen? Well, we say that we believe that Christ's return is imminent. And that word imminent, I believe you know what that means, but it means that it's about to happen. It's ready to take place. It's happening soon. It's just right around the corner. That's what imminent means. You know, the early church believed that Christ's return was imminent. They believed it was close in their day. James 5, verses 7 and 8 says, "Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it until he receive the early and the latter rain. Be ye also patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh." That's what they believed back in the Acts church. You know, we've been hearing this all our lives, haven't we? As long as you can remember, you've been hearing that the return of Christ is imminent. You know, if we hear something a lot and it doesn't happen, it tends to dull our senses, dull our awareness to it. Just like there in South Fork, you know, as they continually heard that this dam is going to break someday, and they didn't believe it. Today, there are many people just like that, that are saying, they're scoffers. Peter calls them scoffers, saying, "Listen, I've heard that for years. My grandpa said that. My great-grandpa said that. I mean, we know it's sometime," but they push it off. They scoff. They scoff about the fact that Jesus will return. A father was once recently telling me from another church. He was having, they were sitting around their supper table and having a discussion about the Lord's imminent return. And he has a teenage daughter. She said, "Dad, they've been saying that for years." This is a young girl born and raised in a setting very much like yours. And she's saying, "Come on, Dad, it's..." Strongly implying that she doesn't believe that it's going to happen soon. They've been saying that for a long time. I trust we take the word of God seriously when he says that we are to keep watching. We had better keep watching. Because the Lord is not slack. This is something else Peter says. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise. He's just patient. So what we view as somehow God's promise breaking down is simply Jesus in his patience and forbearance, waiting for more people to come into the fold so that less people are lost. Do you believe that it is imminent? Do you believe that it is the next great event on the Christian's timetable? I believe that we're in the last days. In fact, it seems to me, as I look around me, it seems to me like we're in the 11th hour of the last days. But I suppose Grandpa thought that. Well, the return is going to be very personal, and the return is imminent. It is coming. Those who are ready and waiting and watching were the ones that will be taken when Jesus returns. And I don't know how you... I suppose there's a variety of convictions on how that will all happen. We would probably all put some of these things on a different timeline. And my my goal here this evening is certainly not to preach something that you would disagree with or not believe. So if I say something a little different than what you believe, just don't miss the main point that Jesus is coming back again soon. We all agree on that. Jesus is coming back again soon. But those who are ready and waiting will be caught up with Christ. We read that in the verses there in 1 Thessalonians. It says we will be caught up in the air to be with the Lord. Some Christians call that the rapture. Caught up. Look that up. Look what that caught up means. That means it comes from a Greek word, which is harpazo, which means to catch away or to be caught up. And in Latin, it is translated rapturo, which sounds very much like our word rapture. So as Jesus comes back there in 1 Thessalonians, the saints are taken out to meet Christ. First of all, they're taken out, and then they come back with him in Jude 1, 14 and 15. And Enoch, also the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all, and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. I understand those to be two different events. In the Thessalonian scriptures, I would understand that as Jesus meeting, as me, if I have not, well, whether I'm dead or alive, I will meet Jesus in the air. In the second coming, when he comes in judgment, I believe that his feet rest upon the earth, upon the Mount of Olives. Zechariah 14, verse 4 says, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west, and there shall be a very great valley, and half of that mountain shall remove toward the south, and half of it toward the north. Again, if you believe that it's going to happen differently, I am okay with that. But Jesus is going to come back. We're going to meet him. We also all would agree that at some point then later, there's going to be a judgment. Jesus comes and takes his saints home to be with him. At some point, all men then are going to be judged. Revelation 20, verses 11 to 15, I'm going to read them to you. And I saw a great white throne and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. I read these verses to you because there's something very defining here in these verses that I would like to point out. Whatever timetable you put these events on, there is a judgment. And the only way that you will not suffer being cast into, well, it says they were judged every man according to their works, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire, and whosoever was not found written, whoever's name was not found written in the book of life, was also cast into the lake of fire. That is certain death. And as these people were overtaken by that wall of debris and water that came down that valley, there was no going back. Their fate had been sealed, a little bit like we were talking about the other night. So the challenge is, your name written there? That is the most important question of the whole evening. Is your name written in the book of life? That's the only thing that will matter on that day. At that great separation, Jesus is not willing that any should perish. I mentioned that verse in 2 Peter. The Lord is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. So are we living today in that readiness? Are you watching? Are you waiting? Are you ready? Are you prepared for that? Are you telling other people that the dam is going to break? The Lord is returning. This will happen very quickly. You know, those people, there are people who saw that wall of water approaching and they had time to scramble up the banks just in time to get out of the way of that raging water. They had a little bit of time, not much. And those who were caught in the night really didn't have any time. But Christ's return will happen in a moment. First Corinthians 15, 51 and 52 says, "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." Now that moment, in the Greek word that is translated from means the smallest possible amount of time. So a moment is not very long. It's the smallest possible amount of time. And then he talks about the twinkle of an eye. And that word means a jerk or a twitch, a barely imperceptible movement. Now, the blink of an eye takes about 0.1 second. So a twitch of an eye is a lot less than that. So what are those verses telling us? I think they are not trying to convey how much time we will have, but the fact that we will have no time. We will have no time to make any changes. Well, in these verses that we read, there was a number of signs of his coming. I'd like to look at that. The signs of his coming. Be alert to the signs. There were signs as that dam began to fail. There were signs. There were telltale signs. They began to see water coming over the top of the dam and start to wash the berm of the dam away. As they waited, hours later, they started to see water seeping through the dam. And after a while, it was more than just a seeping. It was a spurting. There was water spurting out of the dam. There were signs there. There were signs that they could look for and see. There are signs that we should be looking for. And sometimes, I think I hear the attitude sometimes conveyed that, you know what, just kind of don't worry too much. Don't try and figure out too much about how these end time events will happen. You know, it's too confusing and we're better off just not digging into it too much. I'm not sure. I think maybe we should. Consider Jesus' discourse with the disciples as he came in the beginning verses of chapter 24 there as they were walking past the temple. You remember their conversation that the Jews were, or Jesus was telling the Jews, he said, "You see all these nice buildings here?" He said, they're just going to be destroyed. And he went on to say that there's not going to be one stone left on top of another. And as they got over into the Mount of Olives, then the disciples come back to Jesus and said, "Jesus, tell us a little bit more about this. Like, what are the signs of your coming? And when shall the end of the world be?" What did Jesus say? Did he say, "Hey, disciples, don't worry about it. Don't trouble yourself with it. Look, like me and the Father, we have this covered. Just be ready." Is that what he said? You know, sometimes we take that approach. Instead, he sat down and he patiently started to walk them through what they should look for, how this would be. And I think we need to be aware as well. He gave them many signs that they could look for. We're going to look at a couple of those. He tells them they should not be deceived, that they are to beware, that they are not deceived. He says that a couple of times there in Matthew 24. And those words are still they're still relevant to us today. Maybe we aren't digging into Revelation. Maybe we're not trying to put all the events of Revelation on a timeline. That's okay, probably. But some of these things that Jesus gave are things we definitely should be aware of. So beware, lest ye be deceived. There's false prophets out there. They're deceiving many. Paul said in 2 Thessalonians 2, he said there's going to be a great falling away in the last days. Do you see that today? Do you see that great falling away? I think we do. I think we are seeing that. There's some statistics I came across. They're 5 or 6 years old. But in 2017, it said that while 1 in 4 Americans are done with church, so that's 25, while 25% of Americans are done with church, 48% of all Americans are done with God. Known as post-Christian, they say that God plays no role whatsoever in their life. That is 48% of all Americans. And then we're told that America is a Christian nation. 48% of Americans say they want nothing to do with God. Is there a great falling away? I think if that poll had been taken in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s, it would have read something different. But it's not so important what's happening out there as what is happening in here. Are we, as God's saints, the ones who are supposed to be looking for his return? Is there a cooling off? Okay, we say, no, there's not a great falling away, but is there a cooling off? That's what comes first, the cooling off and then the falling away. Maybe the cooling off is a falling away too. I'm not sure where you would say the one stops and the other starts. There is a great falling away. I see conservative people walking out the doors of conservative churches and just letting go of everything they've been taught. And yet their testimony is wonderful. You probably know people like that. There is a falling away. Be careful that you be not deceived. Be careful what voices you are listening to. Not everyone that has a testimony for the Lord is a safe voice to listen to. There are people out there currently that are drawing a following of dissatisfied Mennonites that I believe are deceived and deceiving those following them. So beware that you will not be deceived. He also says that one of the signs is that it's going to be like it was in the days of Noah. It will be like normal life. People will be eating, drinking, getting married, just like they were in South Fork. They were eating, they were drinking. I don't know if they were getting married that day, but life was normal. It was a normal day. They were all wrapped up. They were all distracted by life. It also says in Luke, the verses that I referenced earlier, it says that it will be like it was in the days of Lot. They bought, they sold, they planted, they built it. That's pretty normal, doesn't it? It's normal life. Well, it also says of Noah's day that the thoughts of their heart was only evil continually. And as I read the news, I think it seems like there's many people in our society that their thoughts are only evil continually. I'm not sure how else they can come up with some of these things they're coming up with. Don't be distracted by daily life. We are in that. We are in daily life. We have no other choice. But are we watching? Are we waiting? He says there's going to be wars. There's going to be famines. There's going to be earthquakes. There's going to be pestilences. Are these things happening around us? Now, we are very sheltered in America. Is there a famine anywhere close to you? I don't think so. there's no wars here. We don't have earthquakes, at least not very severe. And so it's easy for us here in this sheltered place to say, I don't see those things happening. I don't know what those verses mean. Must mean it's not very close. Well, friends, these things are happening. Christian Aid Ministries is begging for funds to help feed the starving people around the world. While we sit here sheltered with more than we need, there are people dying right now around the world because they don't have enough of food. There's wars. There's many conflicts. We sit here in America, and yeah, you might know about what's happening in Ukraine, but I believe there's like 30 major conflicts going on around the globe right now. Just because they're not happening right here doesn't mean they're not happening. There will be wars, famines, earthquakes, and pestilences. It also says that iniquity shall abound, and I've already mentioned that a few times, that iniquity is abounding. In March of last year, I believe it was 22, March of 22. Maybe some of you have heard of this. Did you hear about the guy that made the Satan shoes? So if you didn't, I'm going to tell you about it. It was recently. There was this guy that designed and made these shoes. He called them Satan shoes. They were a black and red shoe with an inverted cross and an inverted pentagram on the sole. Now, I don't know if that means anything to you or not, but those are satanic symbols. And in the sole of this shoe, they had I've seen a picture of them. They had a little gel capsule. And they tell me, the guy says that made these shoes, that in every pair of shoes, there was one drop of human blood in the sole. There's one drop of human blood in the sole. He manufactured 666 pairs of these shoes. Does that mean anything to you? He manufactured 666 pairs of these shoes. And they sold for $1,018 each. Now, even the price is significant, because the reason he charged $1,018 is because of Luke 10:18. 10:18, that's 1,018. So Luke 10:18 says, "And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven." These shoes sold out online in less than 1 minute. Does that tell you anything about our society? Iniquity shall abound. I could go on endlessly talking about all the things that are so bad in the world, and I don't think there'd be a lot of value in that. I think we rather should focus on the fact that the Lord is coming, He's going to fix everything that's wrong, and we as Christians are going to be with Him in a glorious place where there is no iniquity abounding. There will be no sin there at all. And because His iniquity abounds, Jesus said, the love of many shall wax cold. The love of many shall wax cold. That's my concern tonight, that we as Christian people have a love in our heart that is growing, that is glowing, that forces us to tell others and show others that there's a better way. There's a lot of lost people out there that don't know where they're going. They don't know which ends up. They're looking to you to help them. Well, we talk a little bit about earthly life. And another thing that I have here is that people will be attached to earthly things. People will be earthbound, if you please. And that also came from Luke 17, those verses we didn't have time to read. But as there he talks about about remembering Lot's wife. But going back to those verses in 1 Thessalonians, where Jesus is coming back and we're going to meet him in the air. We're going to rise to meet him in the air. Think about it this way. So are you looking for that, or is your focus 100% on what makes your wheel go around here on earth? Are you tied to the things here? Imagine with me, as you go to leave this earth, Jesus is coming. You go to leave, but you can't, because you just can't rise, because you're tied fast. You're stuck with your stuff. In Luke 17:32, we're told to remember Lot's wife, and that's given as a warning. Why did he tell us to remember Lot's wife? What happened there? Well, she, you know the story. She was in the city of Sodom. And as those angels came and told Lot and his family they need to get out, Lot's wife didn't want to go. She loved that city. Her heart was there. Her family was there. Her treasure was there. She loved that place, even though it was a wicked place. And so as she left, as the angels took her and finally drug her out of the city, against her will, obviously, she couldn't forget it. And she was told not to look back. Don't look back at these things. Well, you know the story. As she's heading away to safety, she couldn't resist. And she turns around and looks back again. Do you think that was just a glance over her shoulder to see what a burning city looks like? I think maybe it was more than that. I think she looked back with longing. She wanted to be back there. I think that's why she turned into a pillar of salt. Will I be, as I see my Jesus coming in the skies, will I be looking back at what I'm leaving behind, do you think? I hope not. There's nothing of value here. I want to go along. And I trust you do too. So in conclusion, I ask you the question again. Does this strike fear into your heart, or is it a comfort? We are to comfort one another with these words, and they are a comfort to us if we are prepared to meet Jesus. So will I, or will you, be like the rich man who lifted up his eyes in hell? I don't think the rich man ever planned to go to hell. I doubt it. But he died and he lifted up his eyes in hell, where Jesus said, the worm won't die, the fire isn't quenched. It's an awful place. He was there pleading for just a drop of water, just one drop. Now, you know, if you're really thirsty, you've been working hard all day long, you're sweating, you're thirsty, would you ask for a drop of water? Or would you ask for a thermos full of water? I think it gives us a picture of what it was like there. And he could look away off in the distance. And there, sure enough, he saw Lazarus over there. And it was beautiful over there. I'm not sure what he could see. I'm just imagining. But there he saw Lazarus. Well, you know that story. But if we're not ready, we'll be like the men in Revelation 6:15-17. It says, and the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens, and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath is come. And who shall be able to stand? Fact is, none of us will be able to stand. Remember, it is only the ones who have their names written in the book of life. So will we be like the rich man, or will we hear the words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. I've got good stuff for you. Come into my house. Enter into the joy of the Lord. I'm glad you're here." We'll be in that place of stunning beauty, of cities, city that's with streets of gold and magnificent pearl gates. And I don't know what all is going to be there. The Bible tells us a little bit, but it's going to be a beautiful place. Best of all, Jesus himself will be there. I am sure, you know, some days we wonder, is it worth it? You know, you get down into tough stuff and you say, is it worth it? This is hard. I am sure that I can promise on the basis of the Word of God that we will not be asking that question when we get there. It will be worth everything we have gone through to make it there. Jesus said in Revelation 22:12, "And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me, to give every man according as his work shall be." He's going to be coming quickly. Matthew 25:34 says, the verse we read says, "Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." Is your name written in the book of life? I trust it is, but if it is not, I'm going to give you an opportunity to make sure that it is. We're going to have a song by our chorister. And if you are not sure that your name is written in the book of life, if you're not sure that you would like to see Jesus come back this evening, if that is not a comfort to you, then stand to your feet till you're recognized, and let somebody help you through that.